Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I'm David Hartman. It is such a privilege to be here with all of you so that we, all of us together, can share honoring our aviator veterans who have done so much to protect our freedoms, our active duty military, including the civilians now who maintain these airplanes so that we can maintain this history. So it's a privilege being with you today. The P-38 to the right, Connie just mentioned Ron and Diane Fagan from Minnesota. They are giant supporters of EAA and Warbirds in Review. Please welcome Ron Fagan and his son, Evan. Ron and Evan, would you come out, please? Ron, good morning. Evan, morning. Ron, where'd this come from? You have this incredible museum. It is an incredible museum up in Minnesota. Where'd the idea come from?
Well, actually, we started restoring warbirds and building a pretty good inventory, and people kept coming there to get to see them. And one day we thought, somebody said, well, you should just have a museum because people are just constantly coming to see them. So that's where Diane and I and Evan Aaron got the idea, well, let's build a building, let's try to geared up a little bit, notch her up, and to make a museum, and that's kind of how it started in 2012, Evan, I think. 2012 is when we opened it.
So this P-38, Evan, you're the P-38 guy, right?
Yep.
So tell us about this airplane.
Well, I actually just started flying it in April, and you know, the history of the airplane, my dad could probably tell you better, but he bought it from Stephen Gray in 2007, I believe. 2004, and it was restored in 2007, and the Fagan Fighters Group, it was a flying airplane when it came here. It was ferried into Granite Falls. They went through all the systems, new electrical, and replaced a lot of hydraulic, and we painted it as rough stuff, which it flew for a number of years, until just recently we saw that it needed paint, and we thought there was no better P-38 to paint it other than SCAT, which is Robin Old's P-38. We know there's three or four P-38s under restoration now. We figure we better get SCAT on her before someone else does.
Yeah, right. What is it like for you as a young man to fly this World War II airplane, especially the way you've configured it?
Well, it's an honor to fly it. Just to get to be around these has been an honor. But, you know, SCAT is, and Robin Olds, you know, and I'm sure most of you have read his book. It's a pretty amazing life the guy had. Quite an American, and having an airplane with his name on it is an honor in its own. But P-38 for our family also takes a special meaning because my grandpa was in the 4th Infantry, 1st Wave of Utah Beach, and always talked about how his group was pinned down and two P-38s came down and shot all the Germans. And he said he survived due to the P-38. So to get to fly the airplane, pretty big honor.
Ron Fagan, Evan Fagan, thank you, gentlemen, very much.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
You know, it's really impossible because Robin was such a larger-than-life guy to cover, you know, the expanse of his life in a brief period. But let me, a few more details besides what you saw up there on the screen just now. He wasn't only a great fighter pilot, he was hugely respected and admired as a warrior, and he was a leader. Triple ace over two wars, World War II and Vietnam, 16 air victories flying the P-38, the P-51 Mustang, and the F-4 Phantom. Historians regard Robin as having been the best wing commander in the entire Vietnam War. He flew our early jets, in fact, was part of the very first acrobatic demo team for the Air Force. He was highly decorated, of course, Silver Star, three Oak Leaf Clusters, Distinguished Flying Cross with five Oak Leaf Clusters, Air Medal, 39 Oak Leaf Clusters, and many more, including decorations from France and the British. He was inducted in the Aviation Hall of Fame in 2001. He is the only inductee in the National Aviation Hall of Fame who was also inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame because he had been an All-American at West Point. Christina Olds is his daughter. We'll hear from her in just a moment. But first, welcome John Geyer. John, come on out. John, 22-year veteran, Air Force fighter pilot, flew the F-4 with Robin in the triple nickel Squadron in Vietnam. John Guire. Take the next one. Yeah, thanks. I'll put Robin here. Now, Robin, she has a BA in English and creative writing from Vassar. She was super close to her dad and completed his autobiography, which many of you have, again, probably read, Fighter Pilot, the Memoirs of a Legendary Ace, Robin Oles. And know that if you not have not read this book, it is almost impossible to put down. Here's Robin Oles. Here's Christina Oles. You love me calling you Robin? Nice name. Morning, Christina.
Good morning, everyone.
What was your, given how, take charge guy your dad was in every way, personally, personal responsibility, all that, how surprised are you that he, and what was your relationship with him that allowed him to say to you, okay, you can finish my memoirs?
Well, I knew for years and years and years I'd end up having to do his book for him, because when he started writing notes in 1985, he would send them to me in the mail for comments. We did that back and forth for many, many years. But what really happened is when I started traveling to air shows with him in 2001, people would come up to me and say, please make him write his memoirs, please make him write that book. And that's when I began to understand how important it was that his stories would get out there. But in the meantime, all these guys who were authors, established authors, military authors, had offered to him to help him write his book, and he always said, hell no, I won't put the rest of the words out there.
Including Clancy.
Yeah, Tom Clancy came out to Steamboat Springs and sat in his living room and begged him to let him help him write his biography, and my dad said, nope. But it was about a week before he passed away. I was his only caregiver for his last 6 months. And a week before he passed away, he said, I am so mad at myself for not getting that book done. And I said, Daddy, don't worry. I've always known I'd end up writing your book for you. And he said, you will? Do you promise? I said, absolutely. He said, all right, young lady, that's an order. And then he apologized for leaving me such a mess. And it was a mess. I had about 24 banker's boxes full of loose papers. We found papers in boxes under the bed, in the closet. Nothing was organized. Nothing was chronological. He did 3 pages on one memory, 2 pages on another memory, 5 pages on another memory. And so I had to put it all in chronological order, and there were huge holes in the stories. And then I did a lot of research and interviewing the pilots that flew with him to fill in all the blanks. And I wrote, so I wove all the stories together in the book and then added the ones that I knew. And you can imagine the stories I had to leave out. I mean, literally, it could have been a 1,000-page book, and my publisher said, no. So it was a labor of love. I'm so glad to have gotten it done. And the greatest joy for me is I thought when I was doing it, I'm giving my dad a gift because I want him to really be known by people in the world. Well, what has happened is the gift really came to me from him. Because of the book, I've had this amazing new family. The whole aviation world is now my family, and I just can't get enough of it. I love being here so much.
How good a writer was he? I mean, he's
fabulous.
West Point grad, really.
He really was a Renaissance man. He was classically trained. We have the same sort of classic education, and he's a brilliant, brilliant writer, a poet. In fact, a lot of people don't know that. He was also an artist, a very amazing cartoonist, a caricature. I have over 500 of his original drawings that I'm trying to pull together now in a fun little book for pilots. Very irreverent, politically incorrect, great stuff, as you can imagine.
What was it, to talk about him at West Point and the kind of guy he was, even in those years, in terms of duty, honor, country?
Well, he was very much duty, honor, country. You'd talk about the ultimate patriot. But he was also a renegade, which made him loved. He had to march a lot of tours at West Point.
What did he do to get that?
Well, I'm not going to say. He actually was marching tours right up until the day of graduation. He marched his last tour half an hour before the graduation parade and then had to run to join the graduation. But he was a real lover of life. He gathered all the people together to have fun all the time. They had football matches in the hallways after lights, things like that. You know, little things you're not supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly. What was he like in terms of speaking truth to power?
Truth to power.
Like to people in huge authority, if he disagreed with something they were doing, if they outranked him by a bunch.
Well, he would say a lot of things under his breath. I remember being sitting next to him at banquets when somebody would be up speaking blah, 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 and Daddy would be going, bullshit, you know. And I'd have to elbow him, kick him under the table. You know, he had tremendous respect for the people that he respected, that he thought were making the correct decisions and giving the correct orders. But he also was duty honor country to the point that he obeyed his superiors, even if he disagreed with them. If he totally disagreed, he would find a way to accomplish the mission, but kind of do it in a roundabout way, you know, his way. But he never outright disobeyed a direct order, except for when they tried to make him take his mustache off before the end of the war.
Right. Well, let's go to that. Let's talk about that. When came back from Vietnam, right, superintendent.
No, he was a commandant.
Oh, commandant, excuse me.
Of the Air Force Academy.
The commandant at the Air Force Academy. Now, what happened that day when he first appeared?
Well, what happened, let's back up first. I'll tell you why he grew that mustache. It was right after Bolo. You'll notice all the photos of Operation Bolo. He didn't have the mustache. I love that. But in the middle of January, after Bolo, he started growing this mustache. And he grew it, and he grew it, and he grew it out of limits. It was way out to here, way over his lip.
Now, this was when? 67,
67, 67, yeah. January. And so he grew it and grew it, and the generals in Washington started saying, take it off, take it off, you're a bad influence. Well, Robin wanted to be that influence on the pilots. He wanted them to know that there was a renegade leader who was taking care of them and not really listening to Washington. So that mustache became the symbol, and I hope General Welsh isn't in the audience here, became the symbol of Robin Ould's single-digit salute to Washington, D.C. throughout the war. But when he came home, and it was in LBJ's office the day after he came home, and LBJ said, so, Colonel, tell me, how do you think it's going over there? And my dad said, sir, with all due respect to you as my commander-in-chief, get us the hell out of this goddamn war. And Johnson said, well, son, how do you expect me to do that? And Robin said, it's simple, just win it. We can win it right now. Get all those boys home. Just win it. And, of course, that didn't happen, but... So he went to brief the chiefs of staff right after LBJ meeting, and it was then when General McConnell came up to him, stuck his finger under his nose and said, take it off, take it off. So he shaved off his mustache, arrived at the Air Force Academy, all shiny, new as a commandant. First thing he saw on his desk was the cadets had painted four stars on his chair, representing the MiGs he had shot down, knowing that he was going to have to fly that desk for 4 years. Then, when he went to make his first speech in Mitchell Hall, which is the big dining hall there, all 4,000 cadets had fake mustaches on. And they wear them to this day whenever I'm there. The class of 2011 voted him as their exemplar, so they had the name Olds on their shoulder for 4 years. And so I was in Colorado during those 4 years, got to hang out with the kids a lot. And every time I was at the academy, every cadet has a fake mustache on, even the girls. And last year, General Mark Welsh, who's Air Force Chief of Staff, sanctioned Mustache March across the active Air Force for everyone to start growing their mustaches on the 1st of March in honor of Robin Olds. And that was a real thrill for me when that article came out.
Wow.